Welcome to this episode of the Friday Sessions. Today's session was superb, really wide-ranging. We started off talking about small-scale property development. We recapped a pod that we released earlier this week where the guest on the pod turned $150,000 investment into a $5.7 million end realization in their development with about $1.5 million of profit, or 10x in under 2 years. And we talk about why this is a really powerful strategy for young people who don't have any money, how they can put these types of deals together, partner with investors, and actually get themselves on the property ladder. After that, we talked about starting small businesses. I shared some really powerful, granular information about the best way to start a small business. I'm doing one right now with my son and my wife for our son. It's a small e-commerce brand. And I tell you exactly what we did over the last 30 days, starting from zero to 30 days later, getting four products live and selling on Shopify, exactly what we went through. And the little known hacks that most people just don't know because they haven't done it before, but I've done this for 30 years. I shared all of that. We also then talked about AI right at the very end, that I think you'll find that super interesting as well. Not in the context that we talked about it previously. We talked about Grok, but just that whole space and what's going on there. And the other thing that was really interesting, right about two-thirds of the way in, we spoke about the importance of the right wall to lean your ladder against. And I asked the bench some very interesting questions to test what they thought was the best way to invest their capital and what kinds of returns might they expect based on different asset classes. I think you're going to find that mind-blowing because these guys were like, holy crap, I didn't realize that. So it's hard to explain, but when you get to that part of the pod, you'll love it. So it was a really good session today, and hope you enjoy it. Watch it, share it, comment, and let us know how we're doing. Thanks for watching. What is up, everybody? Welcome to this edition of the Friday Sessions. We are here with the A-Team, Eric Machado, Mark DePola, and the one and only James Denham. How are you all, boys?
Very well, thanks. Well, indeed.
Well, indeed. Mark, you good?
Doing good. Going good. Good.
Eric?
Very good.
The hockey hair is growing. I love it.
Yes.
Guys, I just want to do a quick round the table really quickly for our first-time listeners because we're growing so quickly at the moment. We're up a couple of thousand subscribers just in the last 4 weeks, not even counting the Pauline boost that we got. It just continues to grow. So just by way of quick introduction to who these guys are, Eric is one of the co-founders of a business called the MX Store. You can look it up, mxstore.com.au. They are Australia's largest online e-commerce store for the motocross industry, about $100 million a year in revenue, about 170, 180 employees based in Burleigh Heads. We've got Mark, who's a multi-million dollar Amazon and e-commerce seller. He sells beddingware, I guess, broadly speaking, and is crushing it, has done really well. He has a background in property. Was one of Australia's most successful land salesmen, and today spends a lot of time studying macro markets. That's why we call him Macro Mark, because he is really interested in global tectonic plates that move markets and economies, and does options trading and all sorts of stuff around that. We've got James, who has a background in buying, improving, selling small businesses. He's also been a real estate developer in another life and is getting back into that more heavily now. And myself, I've been an entrepreneur for 30 years. These days, I am just an investor. I just support entrepreneurs and invest in first mortgage lending, equities, and different things as well. So that's us by way of background, if you haven't heard us before. And thank you for listening. So what we do on these Friday sessions is we just have an unstructured discussion between the four of us about our take on what's happening in the world, specifically generally around business and investing. And that's how it works. So I wanted to kick things off just by giving a shout out to the podcast that happened on Tuesday this week. So again, for new listeners, we release two podcasts a week, one on Tuesday, which is with a guest or a specialist, sometimes an entrepreneur, sometimes a specialist in a particular area. And on Fridays is these sessions. This past Tuesday, I don't know if you guys have listened to it back yet, but the podcast with Dominic from Melbourne, the architect, Dominic Bagnardo, was an absolute cracker, especially in the market that we're in now, where so many people are wondering, how am I going to get into the real estate market? How am I going to get on this ladder? And this is a really alternative way to acquire capital quickly, which is in small scale property developments. Have you guys heard it back? What did you think? I just love your take.
I haven't listened to the podcast yet, but I've actually had Dom come over to my place in Elwood and assess my property and walk through it. And just the way that the guy thinks and the way he's able to unlock value that other people can't see is just incredible. Like some of the ideas that he had for our like three units and what we could have done with them. He was creating bedrooms where I never thought they were possible. And different ideas that could have increased the value by heaps. So he gave us like three different plans of what we could do, a really excessive design, a mid-range, and a really a shorter, smaller version. And we went for something in the middle. But yeah, he's incredible. He's got a wealth of knowledge when it comes to property.
His name, the Invisible Architect. I mean, he sees stuff that others don't. So, I mean, he does a great job. I think, Eric, you and I and Carson hosted that one.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a great session. So I'm just to sort of hear him unpack. Again, those unlocks where there's the maximum value that can be achieved and the highest and best use and going challenging council on what the local area plan allows for and actually what he achieves. And, you know, to have someone who's never lost a DA in his 40-odd years of being an architect is pretty impressive.
We spoke about that last night on the coaching call with the guys. We basically said that, you know, if we are moving into an environment where interest rates are going to be steadily rising and inflation is going to continue to be uplifting, that we don't have that thing at our back with the interest rates always coming down, that that's going to push all properties up. So maybe the whole buy and hold thing is something that needs to be reevaluated, and we really need to be looking at properties where we can add value. You know, I just had a friend, it's funny because I just had a friend who's a finance broker, and they just bought a place in Altona. And there's room, you know, the driveway is wide enough for them to get a car through past the first dwelling. And there's enough room at the back to kind of cut it in half and put a unit on the back. And, you know, so many people that I see buy for the first time, they buy emotionally. They want to buy that dream home, or they want to get into that suburb that they kind of got an affinity with. Whereas these guys were looking at it first and foremost as an investment. How can we add value? And also they like the area and they're going to enjoy living there. But, you know, it's the lens that I'm always applying to my properties. We live between Elwood and Byron, but they were investments first. And there's an ability and a path and a plan to add value. And Dom was instrumental in both of those purchases as well, kind of guiding me on what I could do.
That's all good. Yeah, I think like you look at what we do in business and property, and what we're trying to do is manufacture equity, right? Like even buying businesses. You're looking at a business going, how can I improve this thing? What aren't they doing? What type of technologies aren't they using? Mm. And it's the same thing with property, right? Like for me, it's not just buying it. And we went over this last night, you know, just buying a business as an example and just sitting it there and ticking along. We actually had one of our coaching clients who has a very successful business, to be honest with you, that is looking at selling his business. And he wanted us to take it to the rest of the community first to see if anyone in the community knows anyone, or if they're anyone in the community is interested themselves, because he doesn't really want to pay $200,000 to the broker because that's what it's going to cost, and it'll be a better deal for the end user. And he works on it 10 hours a week, and it's earning over $400,000 a year in net profit. So I'm like to everybody on the call, I'm like, imagine if he spent 40 hours on a week on it, what it could do. And that's what I mean about manufacturing equity, and it's the same thing in property. It's the same thing I've been doing for a long time. It's not just about buying and holding, right? That's going to take a long time. What you can be doing, like James and I, in the deal that we're looking at right now, like if it comes to fruition, which we have it under contract now and we're under DD at the moment, but the profit in that project is life-changing for people.
Yeah.
Like they won't see that kind of money in their lifetime at one point. Whereas this will be a, you know, a 20 to 24 month project, and then you could just roll into that, and it's seeing what other people aren't seeing, right?
And there's work along the way, like for the project, for a development project or whatever it may be. But really, a lot of the work is done front loaded when you're looking for the site at the start. Same with a business. I think there's a lot that can be said for having that little bit of patience. Initially, like we're always judging ourselves against the property portfolio that guy has and that person and what that person's doing. But there was another guy on the call who basically said they've just sold their house and they got a bunch of equity that they want to invest. You know, what what are the indicators that we should be looking at in order to manage those investments? And, you know, I think we should probably look at another way, you know, rather spending a little bit more time getting deep in the weeds and researching at the start, because really you're only one decision away from a compounding fortune. You don't need to make multiple moves. So I think that applies for business, it applies to property, it applies to stock markets. Front load the work, make sure you're patient, and then strike when you find that opportunity in each of those fields.
That the punchline of that pod for the listeners who don't know what we're talking about, Dom bought a site in Melbourne that other developers could only see two or three units on, and he got it approved for six, but he turned $150,000 of seed capital between him and his joint venture partner on the project. They put up 150 grand. They turned it into a $5.7 million gross realization. That's what they sold it out for, with about 1.5 or 1.7 million profit in under 2 years. Mm. And it would have been a lot shorter, but they had to do a tribunal hearing. But 1.5 million in about 20 months from 150,000 of capital.
It's a 10X.
It's a 10X on your capital.
Cash, yep.
And so guys, the reason I wanted to highlight this at the start of today's pod is that, you know, young people, particularly today, have a lot that they're working against, you know, with a real estate market running away from them. But your ability to sit down and listen to an hour and a half with a guy, because sitting where Mark is, Dom was sitting there, he's done 40 of these projects in his career, never been unsuccessful. Sitting next to him, where James is sitting today, was Carson, who 4 years ago was a carpet cleaner and today has a $100 million real estate portfolio. So you got Dominic and Shannon and Eric, who you know who Eric is because I just introduced him, and James sitting there for an hour and a half going through in detail how to turn $150,000 into a $1.5 million in under 2 years. That is a massive opportunity, and people are not...
The kicker here also is that getting back to, you know, front loading the work and whatnot, but I think it comes back to, you know, knowing the lingo, doing the work, and the front loading comes in the form of education.
Mm.
Try and walk into a situation where you're putting deals together like Dom is or what we're doing right now. It doesn't happen on your first kick. You got to go on, you know, A, do the education, B, have your ass handed to you once or twice on the way through and learn where what to look for as well. But, you know, with Carson's story, if you go back to his, which I think there's going to be a pod coming out about it, is that he was a carpet cleaner. He didn't roll in with $500,000 fresh out of the gate that lay on a down on a deal. He got around an education program, a network, found a deal, put the cash together, and off he went. So it's not impossible to get into on the property ladder if you don't have any money. You got to take the blinkers off and go, where is the money? Where, yeah. And well, that sits in education groups when you've got idea capital execution, which is in the bottom of these caps. So, and to that point, I think there's a free property community happening here at Unemployable. Very sure, yeah, so stick around.
I'm going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, you've just got to lean into it as well. Like, I'll read a message that I got from my brother-in-law's brother-in-law, and he's just like, hey, just a shout out. Listen to the podcast with your sister. Since then, I've been following Unemployable, and this guy is like multi-millionaire, super successful, runs a really, really big business, multiple property developments. He's like, I wanted to give you guys some props and say what a great job you guys are doing. I've been in business, been in my property, in my business and property development bubble for a long time, and I'm learning so much from you guys and the importance now more than ever of education and diversification. Thank you and keep up the great work. Really enjoying it. And I basically said to him that the reason that I decided to do the podcast at the start when I was asked by Adam, even though I was shit scared to get up on camera, was because I felt a little bit lonely in entrepreneurship and I just wanted to connect and build community. And from that, that's also helped me to really get more clear on my truth and the direction I want to go as an entrepreneur. So I just think it's not always even about the money. It's about everything else. It's about purpose. It's about
community. You, Mark, you know, like you've evolved so much since you joined the pod, and I've watched you exactly that. Really clarify. I think by sitting on the desk here, you've sort of
real time, like.
Yeah, you've carved out like your identity in real time on camera, and I think all of us have to some degree.
I was sitting here listening to guests in real time, going, you know, asking myself questions like, "What have I got to offer on this podcast? What are my strengths?" In real time, like, and it, you know, there is that a little bit of self-doubt, a little bit of lack of confidence, but you're working through it all, right? And I guess the point is that there's people watching this show with a whole range of different opportunities and ideas. Yes. And it doesn't have to make complete sense at the moment, but just keep asking those questions.
You know what I love about the property, the property space versus the business space is in business, you start a business and you're committed to it for a long period of time, right? You're there every day, every week. You can't leave it. The finger's on the pulse at all times.
Yeah.
In property, depending on the lifestyle that you want, but this gives you an amazing option if you want a bit more of a flexible lifestyle, is you could go and do a property deal, educate yourself, do a property deal, be in it for 2 years, right? Pull $1 million, pull $2 million, pull $3 million, depending on how good the deal was and your risk tolerance, obviously. And you can cash out and you've got runway. So if you know it costs your family $300,000 a year or $400,000 a year or $200,000 a year to live, and you just made $1 million, you know, you've got 3 to 5 year runway that you can do absolutely nothing. You could take your kids to school every day and you know your life has been paid for already. If that was your decision in lifestyle, you can go for 6 months, you can travel the world, you can come back and do the exact same thing. And I look at, I look at Shannon and Carson and I look at what I do, right? In multiple businesses and this and that. And after seeing what they do, right? In my mind, I'm consolidating now.
Mm-hmm.
When I say consolidating, I don't want more businesses, right? I have the businesses that I have now. I'm happy with them. We sold out of one of them at the beginning of December, which is a great exit. I'm consolidating out of another business, concentrating heavily with Unemployable and property. And obviously we have our online businesses that are trucking along. But I looked at Shannon and Carson and they've got this office with just them two in Burley. They can walk away and lock. They can lock it for a day or they can lock it for a year. They've got no employees. They're doing deals as they need to. Those guys, if they stop tomorrow, wouldn't need to work a day again in their life if they didn't need to. So depending on what you want out of life, right, and the lifestyle that you want, real estate, these chunk deals, right, can change everything for you and you're not married to it for 10 years.
Yeah.
When you build a business, like we built a monster, you can't walk away from a monster. Like MX, Fight, these businesses, you can't just walk away from anymore. Right, unless you go and sell them.
I think that's a really key point. Like I heard a question being asked. You know, what's the new platform that I need to be on for an e-commerce business? Is it TikTok? Is it this? Is that? The reality is, I think now we're getting to the point where there's so many people trying to start e-commerce businesses that it's not enough. And you could just master a platform back in the day and win, but it's not enough to master a platform, even if it's the new platform TikTok or whatever. You actually, if you're going to start a business, you need to be in it for the long haul, or you need to have a plan to exit it pretty quickly once you get it to a certain point, because otherwise it's going to keep sucking. Like you said, it's a baby. It just always needs attention.
Or back a jockey that's going to do the grunt work that's going to be married to while you're not doing.
Of course, clear.
That's the model.
Clear plan, right? And I think for a lot of people, self included, I'm not the type of person that can sit there 10 years, year on year, banging it out with the same business, but I can work hard for 24 months or 3 years nonstop. And so I think it's really relevant what you're saying, that property allows you that ability to just work hard at something for 18, 24 months, make a good amount of money and then reset and go again. Whereas you've got to be a special breed of human to be at it every day.
The beauty with property is, with business, at some point you need to hire team members.
Yeah.
Right. Like
adult daycare.
Yeah. I'm not the type of person, I might be a bit old school, but like to start an amazing business, right, and have everyone be consultants and subcontractors, in my mind, is very difficult.
Yeah.
Right. At some point you need to take the plunge and start hiring people directly. And in property, you don't have to do that. All the consultants are at your fingertips. And all the consultants are nowhere near as expensive as what you think they are on a lot of these deals. And they are absolute experts in the industry, from a town planner to an architect into an engineer. They're all there. This is all they do over and over and over again. And you get to partner with these people, right? And that's what I love.
Fractional staff, effectively.
Correct.
Yeah. I think it's really what Eric pointed out there. His reassessment of his game plan is a really smart thing. Unfortunately, there's a lot of this sort of underlying belief that changing your mind is weakness and it's giving in. Actually, in my mind, changing your mind is a sign of intelligence.
Open-mindedness and strength.
And a healthy ego management. Because so many people aren't prepared to change their mind. And I think, you know, there's that old quote, you know, never, 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 never give in or whatever it is with Winston Churchill. But when you read the rest of it, it says, unless higher ideals or higher truth becomes known sort of thing. And so I think it's really important. And this is, there's different people listening. For young people listening to this, I think both is good. Like starting your own business and doing real estate, once you get some cash flow, that's the formula. But there's other people listening that are, you know, getting to like in their 40s and they're running businesses and they might be running businesses where they've got some capital now and maybe they're in a position where they could transition away from the business a bit more and, like what Eric's saying, move more into development only. And you see this path a lot with rich listers in Australia where they started a business, but over time they become a real estate investor and then over a real estate developer. And then over more time, they become a real estate lender. Like the White family, for example, started the Ray White business. They did developments of their own. And today they have a large family office that does lending to developers.
Yeah, like you look at some of the deals, like again, Shannon and Carson are doing, right? You got some deals that they're doing and making 250 grand. And then you have other deals where they're making 5 million bucks. When you look at making 5 million bucks, we're talking gross 5 million bucks, then you got to pay tax. But we'll just use 5 million because even in business, right?
You
make a net profit, you still got to pay the tax. That's $500,000 a year for 10 years in one hit. And like if you have a business and you're making $500,000 net profit in Australia, it's a pretty good business, right? And I look at that and I'm just like, you start seeing what they're doing. And like you said, they're building nothing higher than a curb, right? On the land side of things. I love the tangible, you know, build side. But let me tell you, I am in, right, the weeds at the moment with the build that we're doing because it's such a high-end luxury build. The detail that is involved, right, and the hands-on approach. And I'm like, I come home sometimes and I'm just like, fuck, you know.
I'm a job.
This is a lot of work that you forget because we're good at forgetting, right? And I've been in this position before. I've done many of them. And then you finish it and it's like, ah. And then you go again, but you forget when you're in the weeds of it.
Very important. The most important thing in business is choosing the right wall to lean your ladder against. Everybody's going to have to work and climb. But I've watched people, like I've got friends here in real estate, and they will tell you from their own, like one of my best mates, he goes, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I know how to deal with people. And like, you know, Mike, right?
Yep.
And Mike's very humble, but he makes millions of dollars a year as an agent. But he said, Adam, I've just not fucked people for 30 years. Right? Like that's my point.
Just tough for an agent.
Yeah. He goes, I'm a nice person. I really care about my clients. And now he doesn't have to look for listings. His phone's ringing all day. I've watched him do $10, $20 million weeks regularly at 2.5% commission, right? Regularly. But it's, you got to make sure you're leaning. So all I wanted to highlight before we close this bit off is what Eric's talking about here, making some time to go away and assess. There's a book I just finished by Andrew Wilkinson, who's a billionaire out of Canada. The book is called Never Enough. Bit of a misleading title because it's not really like that. He's actually a super nice dude. And in that book, Never Enough, he talked about when he first discovered Warren Buffett. He said, here I am as an entrepreneur in the weeds, building businesses and stressing out. And he said, and I'm building these little ships and setting them on sail. Whereas Warren Buffett sits in his office in Oman and just reads about the greatest cruise liners in the world and chooses the cruise liner that he thinks is the most undervalued. And he buys a ticket. He sits on that cruise liner and he just cruises the oceans of the stock market for the next 30 years. And he said, it dawned on me in that moment that Warren Buffett had a much better strategy than me. Rather than building the ships, just get a ticket on a good cruise liner and let time do its thing. And so it's really interesting when you think about it. And I've been doing a lot of that kind of thinking about where I am right now, what is the highest and best use of my resources And like, where, you know, am I better off investing in a small business and trying to start it, or am I better off putting my money in Tesla and just waiting 10 years?
The concept of enough is an important concept as well, I think, because I think not having enough, or the perception that you don't have enough, or the, not even that, having enough and just trying to chase more can sometimes lead you to making the wrong decisions as opposed to just compounding.
Yeah.
As well. So it's something, there's two books that I've come across, the five types of wealth by that Sahil Bloom.
Yeah.
And there's another one, Psychology of Money. And both of them talk about the role of risk, luck, but enough. And it's really interesting.
Well, here's a fun fact for you, right? Like, I spend a lot of time doing this stuff. Tesla, right? Do you guys know what you might know, Mark, so you can sit this one out, don't answer last. But what do you think has been the compound annual growth rate of Tesla? If you just bought Tesla, talking about good cruise lines, what's been the compound annual growth rate of Tesla for the last 5 years as a stock? Just guess.
I saw an article on where it's at. Tell me the share price right now, and I'll give you an...
I think it's $330.
US. Yeah. About 5 years. It'd have to... it's about $60. 80-90% compound cut, something like that?
Yeah. 80-90% a year?
Yeah.
Okay.
60.
Yeah. So the answer is 50, right?
Right.
So just to give you an idea, there's a lot of people here that own a house, right? Own a home in Melbourne, Sydney, whatever, and it's worth $2 million. They paid it off. There's a lot of people. If you were to sell that home and you would put it in Tesla and just let it sit for 10 years at that compound annual growth rate, what do you think it's worth at the end of 10 years?
That's, what's the triple? A triple?
$2 million.
No, 2 million. So every year is $1 million at 50%. So then it's 50%, that's 3 million. Then it's 50% of.
Yeah. What
like you're talking, no, I think close to 15 million.
The answer is 115 million.
Oh, wow.
What the?
Because it's compounding. That's
compounding.
Yeah, wow.
Don't forget, that's if you owed your house outright.
No, and you didn't take a dollar back out.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So hang on. Put the deposit in.
But wait.
That's what you...
Wait. The point...
What everyone puts down is usually a deposit. Let's start with that.
But the point...
We'll get the compound growth rate.
Just him talk.
Yeah, thanks. Is it because not many people have a wedge to go and whack $1 million or $2 million on the house? Use the deposit, which is usually 20% they put down, and put the same calculations in and still blow them out of the water.
Yeah. My point was that there are a lot of people sitting on their family home that they own. I was coaching clients of ours, and I said, look, not financial advice. Mm-hmm. They had very little money outside their home, and they own their home outright.
Right.
I said, you still got income, rent, and then invest the $1 million because it's not, if you're never going to sell this house, put it in the market somewhere. That was my point. $1 million, by the way, is $57 million.
The point is exactly that, right? Like, I've done well over the last 12 months trading and being in and out and timing markets. But the reality is that it's probably overdoing it, and that there's potentially so much more that can be gained by doing less and just focusing on those moments and allowing it to compound. And I got so much more time on my hand and I can enjoy it. You know what I mean? We overdo things. No matter what it is, we try and do too much.
But we've been taught that. Like,
yeah.
Imagine doing that, right? And going, okay, $2 million, $1 million. I'm just going to put this, whether it's Bitcoin or Tesla or whatever the investment, right? NVIDIA, whatever. And you just sit there. We're not taught to sit there.
Is it taught, that was a conditioning?
It's conditioning. We're conditioned, right? To wake up in the morning, to brush our teeth, to get dressed, to wave bye to the kids, have our cup of coffee, and go to work for 8 to 10 hours. This is what we're conditioned as a human society to do, even myself. Like, I feel bad if I'm sick and I'm taking a day. Like Jen says, babe, just take a day off and rest. You need it. And I'm like, I can't fucking do that.
Eric, I'm telling you, you're right.
Who would have thought on the Unemployable podcast we're going to tell you to do less, right? Work less. But it's fucking...
I'll tell you the story behind this, how I came to that realization, because I'm actually doing this right now. I'm selling another property this week. I sold one a few weeks ago for $5 million, and I'm selling another one for more this week. And so anyway, part of my move to Cyprus is I sold my Porsche. You know, $350,000 car. And when you sell $350,000 cars, you meet interesting people, right? So, and it was cool. This guy had just sold out to his public company, big business, 200 employees, sold out. Rings me up. Hey, Adam, can you bring the car to Brisbane? He lives in Sydney. said, I'm going to be in my Brisbane office. Can you bring it to Milton and show me the car? I said, no problem. I'll drive it up. So I drive up. He jumps. I said, here's the keys. We'll let this go for a drive. He says, I got a meeting over at the Broncos. Do you mind just going to the Broncos? I'm meeting the coach. And I'm like, cool. So I give him the keys, jump in. We go over to the Broncos headquarters, right? And I can't remember the coach's name. A lovely guy, ex-Kangaroo. Anyway, we go in. The coach says, because we hit it off immediately. This guy's sort of my age, a little bit younger. I sold his business for a lot of money. We're talking. And immediately, we have so much in common. He's just sold up. He's liquid, all this sort of stuff. What do you do? What do? I introduced him to Wingate, things. And he says to me, a mate of mine actually put $2 million into Tesla 5 years ago, whatever it was. He said he's got like $20 million worth of Tesla stock today. He just sat and wait. And he and I were riffing on just like how we're so conditioned to work instead of think.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep saying to every single person, just take a minute and remember what I said about leaning the ladder against the right wall, because sometimes people are just pumping capital and time, not physical cash capital and time capital, into things that, because they just want to, that they've got the wrong information, which is that's the only way to go. For a lot of people, they would be better off liquefying some of their assets and just being patient and waiting. And that's what I'm doing. I'm moving myself to a low tax environment, lower cost of living, and putting all of my capital to work.
So
cruise ships.
So let's talk about this, right? Because I 100% agree with this theme. I think it's been a massive theme in my life at the moment. It's something that I'm thinking about a lot, like how to do less and how to take the shot when it arises. As entrepreneurs and as people who have been in and around the deal, and you know, you look at Trump, right? Like, what drove him to be the president of the United States? He obviously is a little bit sick, can't get enough of it, so he has to be in the deal every single day. You know, a question here: how as entrepreneurs or business people that are addicted to the thrill and the chase and the deal, how do we go from understanding that that's potentially the right move to just invest, sit and wait, and then deal with that boredom or deal with that perceived lack of everyday purpose? How do we deal with that?
I think it's environment, Mark. So you spend mental time around people who think differently to the hustle culture of Gary Vee and Alex Hormozi, which is great at a certain time in your life. But then there are other communities like Gary Vee and Hormozi that don't use Instagram and social media. They are different environments. Like, I'm part of Invest Answers with James. Mm-hmm. I can't think of his last name, but he has a Patreon group. And the people in there are like buying Tesla stock and then writing covered calls against those and doing like conservative share strategies and helping each other. And you start to get into that world and you go, these guys are actually onto something as well. And there's a whole discussion around why, like James was saying, about real estate in the US and why he won't invest in real estate. And he sort of made the point that, you know, it's America. Handy. Well, yeah, well, he was saying, well, the reason I won't invest in real estate and I'll only put my money into things like, he has a very narrow focus. He invests in MicroStrategy, Tesla, and a couple of other things. And he's made an absolute fortune as a trader, ex-Wall Street. And he said, because in America, 90% of the wealth is in the hands of the boomers and the real estate wealth. And then you got the millennials that have 5%. And so he says, there's going to be this time where these boomers have got all these houses, and they're going to, who's going to buy these $2 million houses when the millennials don't have any money or resources? And they're going to give them maybe to their kids, and then the kids are going to sell them. So you're going to have all these properties coming onto the market without that many people to buy them. And I was like, wow, that's an interesting view that I've never thought of.
Yeah.
Right? An interesting angle. So there's all these types of communities out there. But what I'm saying is, sometimes it just does pay to really get around people and really steel man or straw man your argument of which way you're going. And I'm starting to realize now, having seen the carnage of entrepreneurship over the years and realized how fucking lucky I've been to have one or two things go right, and take those one or two things going right out of a 30-year career, and I would be in a very different position than what I am. And I've seen a lot of mates walk that gauntlet and done the same amount of work as me and worked as hard as me and still not have anything to show for it. And not because they're not good people, it's just fucking treacherous.
It's luck. And luck plays such a big part.
I look back on it over 30 years and I think, man, I wish sometimes I hadn't discovered maybe the Tony Robbins path and I'd actually paid more attention to the Warren Buffett path of like making compounded timely investments and I think of all the money that I've wasted in businesses that failed. I mean, I've burned a lot of capital. James knows that we've been to war a few times. So all I'm saying is what Eric said there about him taking stock of his life and starting to think, hang on a second, am I really, like, let me just be open for a minute. And what with my move, I'm just going to float for a while. And part of that floating is I'm now putting out the energy of, I want to attract new and different people into my life.
Different ideas.
And in Adelaide this weekend, I got an intro to a guy who's lives in Marbella in Spain. I looked at his profile as a professional investor, basically retired. And I got connected with him. He said, oh, dude, we got to talk. And he just basically invests now. And that's sort of where I moved. But anyway, all I want to say to listeners is there's some really interesting things out there. And the reason I'm excited about the property stuff is because property is, as Eric said, all those positive things. With the Unemployable Property Group, we're really genuinely committed to helping people unlock the power of real estate, even if you have no money. And I know people use that as a marketing ploy, but it's actually true that it is very possible to make hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars with none of your own capital if you are in a community of people where you've got people like Eric, who's cashed up, or James or Mark or me, and we've got money, but we may not have a deal. So you can come to the market with a deal and structure you in to get a piece of that, like Shannon and Carson. That's how they started. And so Unemployable Property is going to have Shannon, Carson, Dominic, Mark, Eric, Mark, everybody there. And it's going to be free and they're going to be providing information. And then if you do want a higher level of support, yes, there'll be some coaching and stuff later on. But to start with, for the first few months, probably the first 6 months, it's going to be a free community with thousands of people in there bringing deals, making deals, sharing deals. So the way to be notified about that is go to unemployable.com.au/2025. So unemployable.com.au/2025. And there's a workbook there from our last property day, which shows you some of our real estate deals. And I can sit here and tell you that I'm in this position to be able to allocate $2 million to Tesla and whatever because of real estate partly as well. And so it's definitely been a critical part of my journey as well. So, and some of my deals, three of them that made me millions and millions of dollars are in there. Some of Eric's deals that made him millions of dollars are in there. Shannon Carson's deals are in there. So go to unemployable.com.au/2025. With that said, let's move on to the next part. I want to share just quickly, changing gears to the younger people now, to people who want to start businesses. And again, businesses are an amazing way to create wealth. There's nothing like the delta that you can get. Delta means the gap between what you invested and the upside. That's called the delta. So if you're a small, if you're looking to start a small business, I wanted to share, firstly, a resource with you, which is an Instagram account that I found, and it's called The Corner Office, but corner is spelled weird. So it's K-O-E-R, N for November, E-R. So K-O-E-R-N-E-R. So The Corner Office, and that's on Instagram. This guy has about $150 million worth of van parks and stuff. He's an American guy. But this Instagram account, all he does is show you awesome business ideas and how you can copy them. And like for example, a vending machine that goes into gyms where you can pick your protein shake and everything and what you want in it, and boom, it spits it out. But there's some really random, interesting stuff in there. So if you're looking for ideas, go there, because this guy's brilliant. Like, he does these little 60, 90 second clips that showcases them and tells you how much money they're making, and it's phenomenal. Anyway, I wanted to share that I'm working on a project right now with my son Josh and my wife Cass, and we're trying to get Josh his own e-com business. Josh is 25 years old, and he's smart, and we are trying to build a business that enables him to work from wherever he wants to work. So his dream is to make a couple hundred grand a year, being able to travel, come and see mum and dad over in Cyprus, or hang out in Europe for a bit, or do whatever. That's the goal. And so we are launching a sleep brand. I'll just say it's a sleep brand, which it is. And I just want to share quickly the time frame of what it took, because so many people don't have a realistic, they think, oh, it takes forever to start your own business. So what we did was we sat down together as a family and we wrote a list of everything that had to be done just one big long list. So
it's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period, and with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
Form a company, choose a name, get a logo, open a bank account, open a Stripe account, choose the products that we're going to sell, create the keywords for the Google advertising and get photography done, get t-shirts made for the models, book a date for the photo shoot, get the samples, blah, blah, blah. Just, and that whole thing took about an hour in the first meeting. And then all we did is we delegated the tasks out between the three of us. And Josh and Cass have been working. He gets home from work at 4 o'clock in his full-time job. And they work from about 5 till 8, 5 days a week. And then they work one day on the weekend for about 4 or 5 hours on the weekend as well. And in 4 weeks, and I've done some of the work, overseen things. They did the brand name is Restora, but it's R-S-T-O-R-A, being a sleep brand. That name was from ChatGPT. The logo was from Canva for free. And James, you've seen it. It looks mint, right?
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's great. The package looks great.
Yeah. So the branding looks amazing. What you can get done for free now is just mind-blowing to me. They've got the domains registered, everything like. And in 4 weeks, we have pretty much everything ready to go. We've got the sample products, what we call the golden samples, which is this is the sample that we want you to reproduce at scale for us. We've chosen 4 products. We booked 2 models yesterday. We got a photo shoot on March 10th at our home and here at the studio. Actually, we're using the white background here. So from start to finish, it'll be 60 days from the idea. Incredible. The website being built, Josh has written all the website copy. We've engaged a web designer, $4,500 to build a Shopify site. I've invested the money, $50,000. And that $50,000 includes some working capital and a bit of a buffer, about $10,000 buffer. And we've got 4 products which range in retail price from $30 up to about $300 is the range.
Had a look at the brand. It's great to iron it out in a checklist format and then allocate. But just with that brand, I sort of know just the product. So you've got some high ticket, which will take away the CAC or the customer acquisition cost, and then you've got some consumables on the back of it as well, which I think is where the money's made. So that combination of having a brand with a one trick pony or something you only purchase once can be futile at that $300 price point. It's the back end,
correct?
All the ancillary products that's on where the money's going to be made.
So I can talk a little bit about that strategy. So one of the key things when starting a small business is I call it the day one principle. So most people get excited about the logo and they get excited about the name, especially when they're new. Oh my God, have you seen my logo? Have you seen this? And I'm like, all right, you've got the name, you got the logo, the product, day one. Let's go there now before you spend a cent. How are you going to sell it?
Yeah.
Like, is it going to be an Instagram ad? Is it going to be a TikTok ad? Is it going to be, how are you going to sell this stuff? And it's a mix, James, because in the past, I would say only start with high ticket. What I mean by that is something that's got at least $100, $200 profit in the product so that you can afford ads on social media to get eyeballs. Because if you can't afford the ads, like for example, if the product's $30 retail and there's $15 in it and a click is $1.50, you can only afford 10 clicks just to cover the receipt, right? You'll lose money at that point. But what's changed, James, is TikTok. So now with TikTok, and we're part of Raf and Graham's TikTok community, the Uptick, you can get a lower ticket item now and you can punch it through TikTok shop, and the affiliate, or the what they call a performance marketer, will take 20% commission and there's no other risk, right? So we've got a couple of products which are lower ticket that we'll be paying TikTokers on commission only in Australia. So, but yeah, you're right. We do have a high ticket item, which we can market. It's got, you know, $150 gross margin, and we reckon we'll buy a customer for, you know, 60, 70. So we make that. But when we sell that high ticket item, we're going to throw in some of these cheaper products that cost us literally $2 to make. We're going to throw those in the box with everyone and say, hey, thanks for buying that sleep product. We also sell these things. Here's a free sample. And these free sample products really do work. So the minute you use them, you're like, I can't live without this. It's an amazing product. So we're throwing those in, and those are recurring products, right? So for example, like we're going to give you someone, we got sleep gummies, which knock you the fuck out. Like, and they're all natural and so on. So we'll give you a bag of gummies when you buy our thing, and we're going to market the gummies on TikTok shop as well, right? So there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So there's really recurring items as well. But I guess what I wanted to say to people is that if you putting together a business, it shouldn't take more than 60 days, start to finish, to get it ready to roll when you're committed to it around a full-time job.
How did you get all the samples in that time so quick? Usually I found it's a little bit more difficult to get.
These are basically straight out. It's what I found, straight from China, straight off Alibaba.
Yeah.
What was interesting this time, some of these products, one of them we're buying for retail, I think paying $20, and we'll sell it for $200.
Mm-hmm.
Another one we're buying for $7, and people are selling them for $150 to $200 online right now. But they will, at the sample stage, send you the box and the product branded with your logo on it as a sample. And they only charge us like $100 for the sample.
So you can effectively drop ship and get your photography done straight out of the gate.
Yeah, you could.
Which compresses the time cycle as well to market.
Yeah, we're not going to drop ship for a number of reasons. We're going to actually bring them in. But yeah, we could have drop shipped. Most of them did agree to do that, but we want to bring them in. But no, we just got them air freighted over. They're all small products except one. So yeah, we got them pretty quick, got the samples, and it's exciting. It's really exciting to see it.
Are you using it in the 3PL, or are you guys going to pick and pack yourself out of the garage?
To start with, we're garaging it.
Yep.
So I said to Josh, you know, you got four products. Every day when the orders come in, you're going to print the labels off with a thermal printer from Officeworks, and you're going to run them down to the post office. And then when we order the next lot, which will be coming over, the great thing about these products is they're air freight, so you don't need containers.
Good.
The next lot we'll have in a 3PL, and that you need the 3PL for mobility,
mm-hmm.
because he can't be in Thailand or bloody Bali or wherever he wants to be, because you've got to be there to receive the goods.
Yeah.
So... So anyway, it's a really exciting thing, and it was just a great reminder that it doesn't take a lot of time. And I said to Josh, you know, mate, if you only get to selling a couple of each of these products a day, he's making $100,000 a year, and that business would be worth at least $200,000 at that point, which is a 4x on the money. And I think you can do that in a year pretty easily.
I think another thing to just throw in there is about the time to put this brand together, and you've done it numerous times before, so it's not like the first time. I might have a few more struggles on the way through, again education, but you know, you talk about margin, you talk about click, you talk about TikTok shop, but it's also, I think, something that might need to be spoken about is also volume. Is there a hungry market for it as well? Mm. And then sleep obviously has.
So we look at Google Trends and just also seeing what's happening in the health space at the moment.
Yeah.
We narrowed in on sleep, and we've narrowed in on products that genuinely, when you use them, instantly you can feel the benefit of it, you know? Like, so one of the products we'll be marketing is breathing tape, right? Like, we're not going to be the first people in the world to do that. That's it. But whenever, if you haven't used breathing tape before, you put it on your nostril, mm-hmm. and it opens up like you see Homozy. Every single person we've put that on, the second they put it on, they go, oh my God, now I understand why people are using these things, right? So they're like that. They're instantly demonstrable and feelable. They're not like subjective. They actually work. One of the devices is not a ingestible. It's a device that I'd never heard of before, and it sends you to sleep in or makes you incredibly drowsy within
chloroform.
I was just gonna. Yeah.
That's your dating drug.
Let's go on a date.
That's your pickup line. Hey, could you just tell me, does that smell like chloroform?
Sure.
Roses are red, violets are blue. I've got a van getting it. I got a knife getting the van. Is that your Valentine's poem, James?
Valentine's poem.
Derek. I think people need to, again, not compare someone's first inning to, you know, someone's ninth inning. What we got to keep in mind is Adam has done this for a long time, right? Adam, one of Adam's superpowers is
branding,
starting businesses, getting out of the gates very, very, very quickly. So if he's done this, you know, in 60 days, don't feel pressured that you have to do it in 60 days, right? It might take you 90 days or it might take you 120 days. But like he said, I just love the basics of create a list of everything you need to do, right? Then itemize it and then delegate it.
Yeah. As someone who's set up a couple of e-com businesses now, I would say what Adam does incredibly well is not spend too much time on the things that are insignificant or not significant to the overall success of the project, like the logo and the things like that. Like all that can be changed down the track. And the key dominoes, which is how we're going to sell it, what's the purchase price, like those, you got a way of zeroing in on those key dominoes really, really quickly and ignoring the rest. And I think the majority of us spend so much time on those things that are a little bit insignificant.
The other thing, Mark, is pulling the actual trigger. Like open a bank account, put the goddamn money in the bank account and start spending it on the things that you need to start. There's so many times people just do everything but, and they go, oh, they go back and forth with the logo and the logo and the logo. And like
8 years later. I think also this, that even, you know, if you go into GPT and you go, what's on that list, just to break down and double click on that, it's like, well, act as an e-commerce expert. I'm about to open a brand in X space, list every single thing in detail that I need to do to get to market in the order of priority. It'll do it for you. You don't need to take an hour. I mean, you could, but you can, because I've done it for other businesses as well. But I think Adam just highlighted there GPT, Canva, which is next to fuck all. Alibaba got the product. I mean, it's not that, there's only about four or five steps in Stripe is another one. And opening a company, Patricia Holdings. I mean, you can get it all done pretty quick.
You'll see this product on the pod because we'll sponsor at least one episode just so you guys can see the end result of it. And it looks...
The branding's slick. Yeah. It looks good and simple, minimalist.
Yep.
With Alibaba, what are a couple key takeaways you could give the audience that haven't used Alibaba before? Because I've been on it multiple times and ordered stuff off Alibaba. But for someone that hasn't been there before, it is one overwhelming platform of just how do you decipher the shit from the diamonds, basically.
Yeah, how many?
So is there a few key filters that you put in? What are?
One big tip, and I realized this when Cass took that job on and said, I'll find the suppliers. I'm like, great. She just went in and put in, you know, nose tape suppliers, started searching one by one and contacting one by one. But no, stop. Let's do an RFQ document, request for quotation, RFQ. So I went back to Canva and I said, we've got to tell a story because we're not going to be a big buyer. We're going to start off saying we only want 1,000 units of nose tape and they're like $2 a bag. So it's not a big order. It's a $2,000 order. So that to them is nothing, right? It's a small. So what we got to do is create a document that says, this is who Restore is. And I got Josh. I said, Josh, put on a t-shirt. Oh, we don't have a t-shirt. All right, let's get a t-shirt. Got a t-shirt with Restore on the front, black t-shirt, white print, came in here, stood him in front of that thing, took a couple of photos, right? On my iPhone, but look good. I said, I need this for the RFQ because we're going to position Josh as the founder, this Australian entrepreneur who tests various products and then scales the ones that work, right? And Josh got this document after I'd written and goes, fuck man, I sound awesome. So we make this RFQ document that has Restore, the brand, the science of sleep, who about Restore, about the founder, our strategic approach to the sleep space, right? All this bullshit. And they said, here's the four products that we are currently seeking RFQs, which are going to be the next products we take to market to test.
Good.
And so then once we had that document, which took me about 2 hours to write and put in Canva just using a template, then we go to Alibaba and we upload that RFQ and say, here's our current sourcing targets and the four products we're trying to source, please submit your RFQ to this. Yes, these first orders are going to be small because we test before we scale. So please understand that you're quoting on a test order of 1,000. If we have product market fit, then we'll order at scale from you. And so then we put that up. An RFQ is where you put in what you want, in one place, and then all the factories see the RFQ and then submit to you rather than the other way around.
People can overlook this very easily, right? But there's a couple things that happen there, right? Like, one is you're framing the company that hasn't even started yet. That is, right? Because that gives you credibility. You can imagine the thousands and thousands of inquiries, right? These Chinese companies get every day from people that do not try or do not think outside of the box. Hey, we have a company, it's called Restora. We're looking for 1,000 samples. What's the price? That's what 99.9% of the people will do. And then all of a sudden, they'll get this RFQ from Adam, right? And they're going to stop and go, holy shit, right? That's standing out. You're standing out from the competition. And it's so funny because Dominic does the exact same thing.
With real estate.
Like, he's got people that that are in council that he's worked with over the years that then quit or they get another job and they leave council and they email him, literally email him saying, hey, just want to let you know, you're one of the most favorite clients that I've actually worked with just because how easygoing you are and how creative you are on basically standing out, right? And in business, it's funny because I'm not creative, right? So when I hear this, I'm just like, that's fucking so smart, yet it's so basic, right? And it's like, I know I have Adam, right? That I can give Adam a call. I can say, hey, let's have a coffee. I think if you're not Adam, right? And you're not that creative, who's your Adam that you can call, that you can sit down with and go, hey, here's my idea. What approach would you take? Right, because I wouldn't think like that. You know what I mean?
These days, you can put it into an AI bot, and they'll go crazy. Yeah. Like,
but most people won't do it though. That's the thing, right? We are humans. Is the path of least resistance. Well, do as little to get as much value back. That is the reality. Like with unemployable, with what we're doing, right? People take us seriously because we framed ourselves. We've got the studio. This is our RFQ as an example to someone else's that's not doing it, that's just doing it out of the back of the house. And it's the same thing what you're doing. People will take you so much more seriously. The order of 1,000 doesn't change. It's still 1,000.
Right. Frame change.
But the frame changes.
It's like what Adam said before. We've got to spend less time doing and more time thinking.
Yes.
Right? Like, you say you're not creative, but I think all humans at their essence are creation. Like,
yeah. Well, I agree. Right, I'm not thinking enough.
Of all the animals that exist on this earth, we are creation. We are the essence of creation, right? So we've got to be spending more time thinking.
That creative space. I got a phone call last week from somebody who was on this pod. I won't say who, but he at the end of the pod off camera, he said, do you guys know anybody? And I have a mate who has a very successful business with 300 or 400 staff. He's a multi-millionaire. Plays poker with us, and he would be a good client for this person who was on the pod with his business. He said, oh, can you make an intro? And I said, I'll see, right? Because I don't want to, because he's very successful guy, and I don't want to burn my contacts, you know what I mean, with a guy that was just on the pod. I don't really know him that well. I met him on the pod. I said, look, I'll reach out. And I reached out and he said to me, yeah, here's my guy. Give him his details, right? So I did that. And then I get a call. I said, I spoke to him. He said, this is the guy in the company. Contact him. And then he rang me last week, said, hey, mate, it's been like 2 months. I sent an email and he didn't respond. Can you like go back to your guy and ask? And I said, no. I said, he goes, oh, okay. I said, here's what you should do. Go to danmurphys.com.au, pull your credit card out, send him $1,000 bottle of Grange to his assistant, and then he'll pick up the phone to you. I said, just buy the meeting, mate, right? Like, just be creative. I'm not going to go and lean on my guy because I don't know you that well. And I was just straight with him. And he goes, fuck, I didn't even think of that. I know he's got the money. He's a funded company. He's got the money. He just didn't have the creativity. So creativity can be priceless. So with the Restora brand, that's what we did for all of them. And that's why we got our product maybe as well quicker, because they as soon as they saw that RFQ, they were like, boom, what else can we do for you? And so we had products flying in. We start off with five products. We've ended up with four. One of them, we just couldn't make the numbers work. And my job is to drill into the numbers. And that's the product I like the most because I actually use it. It's an oversized product and I use it every night and I'll never want to sleep without it, but I just cannot make the numbers work. And I think that's why they're not sold in Australia, because of the freight and stuff. But anyway, so the RFQ is definitely the biggest hack. But you know, again, it's just there. Most people sort of around the edges and they're sort of floating. They're not making decisions. And I had a guy on Minect, you know, hit me up and they pay me, I don't know what it is, $50 US or something to answer a text. And he said, how do you do this? And I said, this is exactly what we did. And he goes, but what else do you do? I'm like, there's nothing else, bro. Like, there's just like, write the list and do the work, right? Like, and that's it. So anyway, we'll be interested to see how that launches soon. We're really excited. It's so good seeing Josh pumped. And for those listening going, yeah, but you've got a rich dad. There are so many people.
Rich dad, poor dad.
Oh, God. but there are so many people that would fund a young entrepreneur with a good idea that if you
presented it well.
Yes, if you use what I just taught you, go to Canva, create a killer bit of documentation, give up some equity, give up a decent chunk of equity. If you're starting with zero, be prepared to give away half the business if you have to. Don't try to Shark Tank your way out of a deal.
Just fucking get out of your head and take your shot. Yeah. Like go and hit someone up. Go and hit,
Yeah.
And I said it. I was at an event on the weekend and we were speaking, one of our coaching clients filled the room with about 100 entrepreneurs and they were talking about, you know, funding and money and, you know, how to get funding and stuff. And I was just like, all right, so it's your first deals, right? Like you haven't done much. And I'm like, do you guys have equity, right? That's one of the questions I was asking. And some of them don't, some of them do. And I'm like, why are you trying to get a partner for your first business if you're not willing to go and pull out 50 grand or 100 grand or 25 grand of your own money, right, and commit it yourself, but you're going to take someone else's? You got to remember, this isn't people that have done it for 5-10 years that have, you know, the framing and have it, you know, that have done it before. And they're all kind of like, oh, I'm like, you need to back yourself. If you're not going to back yourself, right, why is someone else going to back you? And I'm a big believer in that, right? Like if it's your first one and you do have access to cash, all that's telling me as an investor is going, you don't back yourself enough because you're not trusting yourself with your own money. Why am I going to trust you with mine?
100%.
Different story if you've done it. Like if Adam came to me and said, hey, bro, I've got an idea, right? I'm like, how much? Because he's done it so many times. Now, yes, there's been failures and successes, but let me tell you, in business, you're going to have more failures than you are successes. That is the reality, right? Knock on wood, right? Everyone's different.
Except Eric.
Right? No, knock on wood, everyone's different. I've had some, Eric. Yeah, some, this is those smaller failures, but that is the reality, right? Mm. Like you have to back yourself before you're going to get somebody else to back you.
Yeah.
And that's just going to be, you got to earn it over time, right? Like James and I, as an example, we have a property deal at the moment. I'm kind of like, you know, do I want to put in my own money again? Or let's bring somebody in. Like these are the discussions that we're having. But let me tell you, if I actually went out there and said, hey guys, for anyone that's interested to invest with me, click here. There will be a lot of people. Why? Because I've done stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've succeeded in stuff. And I've risked my own time and money over the years, which builds the trust. Shannon and Carson, if they came to me and said, hey, I've got a deal, do you want in? I'm all ears.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they proved themselves to me already. They proved themselves, not just to me, they proved themselves to themselves.
Yeah. And to be clear, when I said I failed at a lot, these days, my failure rate's very low. But to get to the point where it's very low, I made some very painful mistakes.
But I think as you get older, you become more conservative.
Totally.
Like I'm a lot more conservative now than... Like I think back in the day when I invested in some of the business that I did, I was just kind of like, fuck, man, that was a bit of green. There's a bit of green in there, you know, there's a bit of green in there.
That's part of it, right? Like to see Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg or all these people who make it on their first try. I mean, they're in the right place, the right time, the right confluence of things.
Yeah.
Really, the path for most entrepreneurs is failure after failure after failure after failure. And, you know, the key is to start to get more comfortable with giving things a crack and it not working out. You know, what's the worst? What's the worst that can happen? Like, you have to start from zero and you only, like, you just keep going.
It's being comfortable with failure.
Yeah.
And it's so easy for us to say it on a pod, right? But when you look at, that's the reason why we have that boxing picture up there, right? Because that guy's knocked out, but he's got to get back up and go back to training the next week and keep going.
You know, is it Sarah Blakely? Sarah Blakely, yeah, yeah. Who did Spanx? I listened to her interview on when she talks about her success, and she says, without a doubt, two of the things that changed the course of my life when I was young is my dad would ask me every night after school, "So, honey, what did you fail at today? What was it that you sucked at? What is it that you did really poorly?" And he would celebrate all of those things rather than, "What did you get an A plus for? What did you win at?" And she said, the second thing is, I hope I remember the story. I may have got it wrong, but the point is what matters. One of her teenage friends, I think, got was on a bike and got hit and died. And she realized very early on that that could have well have been her. And that she needs to make the most of all of opportunities. So, like she says, those two things, without a shadow of a doubt, changed the course of my life because it was a different framing.
Appreciation for life and a willingness to fail.
Yeah.
Hey, look at Elon, you know, blowing rockets up, and the stuff that guy went through to get to where he is. It's crazy.
Peter Thiel says about Elon Musk, that he's co-founder at PayPal and one of the first investors in Facebook, says, you know, either Elon Musk has worked out something about, it's quite possible that he's worked out something about risk and failure that the rest of us don't yet understand.
So, great pod came out this week, Stephen Bartlett, Diary of a CEO, interviewing Mr. Beast.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have not watched that pod, it is epic. No matter what you think of Jimmy, and if you've seen all the drama and controversy over him lately, people trying to take him down, the guy's 26 years old. He's a billionaire. So you need to, like, if you want to learn about obsession and excellence and...
And I didn't realize that.
But again, sorry, if I can interrupt just quickly, I think this is an important point because often what we do is we like to compare ourselves to the extraordinary success story. And there's probably less that can be found in that person's story than just identifying patterns that are happening over and over again for a lot of people. Not that you can't learn anything from your story, but if you're comparing yourself to your story, you probably will fail because there was a confluence of things that had to happen to make Mr. Beast, Mr. Beast, or Elon Musk, Elon Musk, or Zuckerberg. So just focus on the successful patterns you're seeing within the average person,
yeah,
and try and replicate those things.
Well, one thing I was so surprised is that he's got Crohn's, like he's sick. Mm.
A lot,
you know, so most of the time he's actually sick. He's that at 110%. He has trouble sleeping, and they're doing the pod at 1 a.m. Then after the pod, he then goes to the local store and basically teaches Steve Bartlett about how, you know, the chocolate industry and how screwed it is and why he's taking it over with Feastables. I'm just like, man, the headspace you have to be in, yeah, and the commitment you need to be in to have to go and smash out a pod at 1 a.m. and then keep going. Meanwhile, you're sick, like you've got Crohn's disease and you're dealing with this and you're taking, multiple medications every day. That's unbelievable.
And the flight schedule he had from South Africa to wherever it was, about five flights all around, and he just did 4 days in the hospital on top of it. And he's like, fuck, get me out of here.
Going to Walmart's in the middle of the night and restocking the chocolate himself.
Yeah.
It's an incredible, and the TV show is actually pretty cool if you haven't seen it. Don't know if you saw Beast Games on, is it Amazon?
Yeah,
Beast Netflix. Games,
yes. I still haven't watched any Netflix of his videos.
Yeah, no, watch the Netflix. It's on Netflix. No, Amazon. It's on Amazon Prime. Yeah. And it's the most expensive game show ever. He said he's lost money. Tens of millions.
Yeah, he's obviously making it somewhere else. But he's like, when you actually look at, like, it's funny because we got Stuart here in the studio, and he's like, a lot of people, you know, don't know who Mr. Beast is, you know, and he's like, how don't you know who Mr. Mm-hmm. Beast is, right? But I'll tell you, I did not know who Mr. Beast was 2-3 years ago until my eldest daughter showed me something on Mr. Beast and what he was doing with, you know, the water in Ethiopia and these types of things.
That's the perfect framing. Like, where I consider ourselves successful entrepreneurs, I've never watched his video. We didn't know who he was, and yet he's out there and he's a billionaire. That's the framing of how much opportunity is out there. And if you're still thinking like the way that we're thinking, maybe we're even falling behind, right? Like, there's just, you've just got to pay attention to what's happening, the patterns that are happening at that other level.
Big world out there. So watch that pod if you haven't watched it.
I've got one more little nugget I was telling you guys about during the week. If you haven't tried Grok 3, which is the AI tool by XAI, you've got to give it a go and you've got to try the deep search feature. So it basically sits there and shows you its thinking, where it's pulling the resources, and you can ask the most incredible questions. Like I gave it Mara, the Bitcoin miner. I said, here's what Bitcoin's worth. Find out how many Bitcoin they have. Tell me if you think that the stock is undervalued based on their Bitcoin holdings. And it went down and did this massive analysis. And you can ask it a whole range of different questions. It's got a deep search function.
Just to be clear, in Australia, just for the listeners out there, Grok 3 you can access from a desktop version or you can access through the X app.
They've got a Grok app now, so you can download the app from the App Store.
And it's for paid subscribers only for Grok 3 at the moment.
Right, okay. Correct.
And it's about 30,
I pay about 30 bucks or 40 bucks a month.
30, 40 dollars Aussie a month to try it. And if you're using ChatGPT 4 or 4 mini, I mean, it's $20 US a month, so you're not too far behind the
eight. Did you use Grok 3?
I'm about to try it out. I'm paid subscriber to GPT 4 and whatnot, so I'm certainly going to pony up the first 30 bucks and see what it goes, how it works.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think it's overtaken. It's like it doesn't have the voice capabilities and everything that OpenAI does, but the ability to go in and do deep research on a topic, I think it's completely changed the game.
It's another reason, not financial advice, that I'm stocking up on Tesla because it's going to be integrated into Tesla cars.
Yeah.
So while you're
driving.
Yeah. So while you're driving.
Is that Elon Musk's Grok, right?
Yeah. So it's another.
X.
So it's going to be embedded into Tesla motor cars and.
And he's at the, I mean, not to give a financial advice, but this guy's at the pinnacle of thinking AI and real world AI. Mm. And he's going to merge those two worlds together. Like it's
fun,
just.
Fun fact. Grok will talk dirty to you.
Yeah.
Man, when you sent that into the chat, I was just like.
So I said, when Grok meets Optimus, Hollywood Showgirls is going to go to business.
Because he loves all about free speech. So she is a nasty, nasty piece of work.
Reading the tea leaves as well.
Or he is, whichever floats your boat.
She is.
The CEO.
Two sexes these days.
The CEO of Microsoft just announced that he's cutting spending on AI as well. And so
CEO of Microsoft,
Satya Nadella, who's in partnership with OpenAI, has just advised, just came out today and said they're basically cutting back on their AI spending. Now, people might misinterpret that as he's not bullish on AI, but I got a funny feeling that he's reading the tea leaves and I think Elon Musk is out there to crush OpenAI.
Well, if you read the comments about Grok on different Instagram handles, I follow all about AI. It's just basically saying Grok 3 has just wiped the floor with all of them. Full stop.
And it's done it in like that amount of time.
And it's more weight yet to come. But I think Elon did a speech on it a week and a half ago or something. And Voice is probably only about 3 or 4 weeks away as well. So all the trinkets that OpenAI has got is already.
Never bet against
Elon.
He has Elon.
I didn't bet against him.
Not against him,
but with him.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I bet for him. You went.
I've never gone short, Tesla.
You never gone like short. That's right. You went long.
I'm not stupid. You
went long. People had their faces ripped off short.
I ain't short in Tesla.
Yeah.
I've traded it in and out, but I haven't gone short. No way.
Like Bill Gates switched short of Tesla. What it was in Elon when he. Bill came knocking for money, basically told him to go fuck himself.
He goes,
he said, you don't like my
goes,
fuck, I'm not paying you $600 million.
Bill Gates asked for like $600 million or $1 billion donation, and Elon goes in text message, have you still got the short open on Tesla? And he goes, yeah. He's like, what the fuck? He goes, I'm not giving you any.
You're trying to crush me.
Fuck?
You know those Instagram pages? I think I follow one called Intern Save or something like that. And it's basically all about. Yeah, no, Invest Save, I think it is.
That's Invest Answers.
No, it's not. I don't know if it's that one. No, but it's one that basically breaks down going, okay, these are the last 8 companies that Jeff Bezos invested in.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And it's like 90% of them is AI. And when you start looking at it, it's like $4 billion, 600 million and the numbers, but it's all AI.
Mm. But not only that, you saw the pricing round when they invested in the round, where it was and where it's at now, like two or 3 years later, like fucking.
And what they paid
10x most of them.
Yeah, and what Google paid for YouTube, what it's worth now, and all these acquisitions that these big companies employed. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is so important. It's getting back to that, just expanding your thinking and not getting too in the weeds of, you know, we all have patterns running us. And sometimes we don't know where those patterns started, but quite often it could be right back in our childhood where you say, fucking go and work hard. You wouldn't know a hard day's work if it jumped on your head. And like, well, whoever said the hard day work is the goal. I would rather, all I want is a fair week's pay for a fair day's work.
You fucking heard that on the podcast.
I don't know who said that. One of you guys said it.
But we are programmed. We are all programmed opposite. It's something that we all have to overcome. But how do you overcome it? One, by realizing it. Two, by speaking about it.
For me, the biggest lesson that I'll take away from today's podcast is when I ask the question, you know, how do we get out of our entrepreneurial go? And your answer was brilliant. Just put ourselves in different environments and speak to people who kind of see the world a different way. I think that's so exciting for you.
That doesn't have to be as daunting as finding a network.
Find a chat room.
YouTube, you know, just go into YouTube.
Or if you want to find a different environment, put yourself up on a reel. Eric just got a taste of that this week.
Fucking toasted.
No, but you know, sometimes I think about that, like the awful world that is trying to get viral content to go viral and just seeing, like, if you're sitting there replying to those comments where people are just fucking saying you're a cunt, you're this, that, you're whatever.
I think that's the first time the C-bomb has been dropped on the pot. Well done.
Okay. Well, it's like that can put you in a pretty bad place, even if you're thick skinned, because that's where your focus is. Whereas, you know, there's a whole world of
positivity
and
yes.
Yeah, makes sense.
Really, it's getting in those environments, but it's also on a very practical level, getting a compound interest calculator app on your phone and just going, hang on, I'm thinking about keeping my home that's worth $1 million or selling my home and renting and putting that $1 million to work in the markets in these asset classes and just sitting down doing the math. Math is so calming and powerful.
Yeah,
yeah.
But people make emotional decisions instead of logical.
I pulled that calculator with the bride on the weekend and went through just some small investment. I said, take out taxes, that whatever. And her head was blown. I said, but the discipline is holding it there for 10 years.
Yeah. Did she just say the bride?
Well, you know, the current bride, you know.
Future ex-wife. Wow.
Let's
does she know you're on the side of a bus?
Let's not burn another one of James's.
I'll do it myself. It's fine.
Your point is well taken. So you sat down with her and just go through that.
Oh, I just ran some numbers. I said, if you only started with the grant, I just talked about putting $1 million in. And if you had a 9% return, like Wingate, over what to with less than tax, what's it going to look like in 10 years? 15, then 20 years, and it obviously goes fucking top, left the top right. And I said, even just $1,000 a month invested every single month, that it was returning 9%. And I said, it's slow, and what most people miss in the first 5-6 years, it doesn't look like it's doing anything, then it just takes up like a rocket.
And I said, people need to do that, James.
Yeah, and so I sat down, pulled the calculator out, and punched the numbers in. I said, just get it and play with yourself. Yeah. I don't know, work
for it. For anyone that doesn't know, right, what when we talk about CAGR, right, compound annual growth rate, research it. Do yourself a favor. Research it. YouTube it. Google it. ChatGPT it. Have a play around. Like you said, I have it as well. Download the app. There's multiple apps. Play with the numbers, and you too will be amazed. Like, we could sit here and talk about it, and we refer people to books, and we refer people to, you know, YouTube channels and stuff, and there's a lot of noise. There's a lot. You're not gonna be able to do it all and read every book and go on every YouTube channel, but just start somewhere.
Warren Buffett said that the eighth wonder of the world is compound interest.
It is. Yeah. I mean, selling these properties for me has been emotional. Like, my home is beautiful. I love my home. And the building that I sold, I love that building. Like, I love walking through it. I feel significant when I'm there with this massive building with multiple tenants. But I know the math. I've done the math. I've run the math of what the compound annual growth rate of those properties are. And then I know what it costs to hold the properties, and taxes and insurances are all going up. They're not going down. mean, the fucking Gold Coast Council just introduced view tax. You live over the fifth floor, and they've increased rates by 50%.
We're talking about this, how taxable property is.
Gets taxed to shit. So it's a good way to build wealth, but when you're in a different stage where I am, I'm like, I know all those numbers. And you look at commercial yields, and because I've owned commercial, I know what the real yields are as opposed to their advertised ones. But I've done all the math, and it's that basic math of going, there are other options. What are they? Keep looking. With that said, guys, let's wind this one up. Thank you for watching, everybody. Hope you've enjoyed it. Drop us a comment below. Let us know. Did you enjoy today's pod? What did you like about it? How can we improve? Thank you for watching. Have a great day. Bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.